Hello, welcome to, well, we hoped was going to be TRU Instagram Live to discuss the Lions' second test against the South Africa at the weekend. But it's turned into a bit of a pre-recorded Instagram Live slash TRU talks because of some technical difficulties I experienced earlier on this afternoon when trying to save the video. So Joe has kindly given up his time to re-record our brilliant content for you again. So Joe, thanks very much for giving us your time to chat about what we talked about 3 hours ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult to kind of replicate perfection, but we're going to give it a go. It was, to be fair, one of our better rugby chats, I'd say. But no, it's always a play. I mean, hopefully we'll recapture some of the magic, you know, circuit like the Lions are hoping to do from 1997.
Nice segue, Joe, into the weekend. We will be talking about the Olympics as well. Later on, and obviously Joe has done some great work around Team GB over the last sort of few years. He's been with TRU, especially over what has been an incredibly difficult 12 months for the team. But we will be getting onto that later as well. It's not going to go off TRU's radar at all, despite all the hype around the Lions and obviously the second test to come on Saturday. The Lions leading 1-0 after that enthralling game last weekend. But three changes, obviously, Joe, to the side, which Warren Gatland has assembled for the weekend. Thoughts just generally to begin with on the three changes?
Well, and I think what we're going to say a lot throughout this entire chat is, well, what I said earlier was, and you know, kind of one of the things I picked on earlier was he's added more experience to the team. If you kind of looked at it in the grand scheme of things, Conor Murray coming out scrum half, and then obviously Mako coming in at loose head, and then on top of that we've got, oh God, Chris, what's the other change? I can't even remember anymore.
Harris.
Oh, midfield, Chris Harris. Yeah, Chris Harris is coming into midfield. He's gone with more experience and arguably more defensively adept players in that sense, because you can afford to roll the dice on the second game. Because if you go with that more experience, the likelihood is, you know, if you have more experience, you'll pick up a win again. But if he doesn't, then he can go back to the winning formula that picked up the first test win in Cape Town last weekend. So I see it as a bit of a win-win. And at the end of the day, if they do lose, we get a more exciting match on the 7th of August, which is maybe my more cynical way of looking at it. But I mean, for you, what's kind of the most surprising one for you?
Do you know what? I think that maybe the most surprising change out of all is probably Conor Murray. And when you speak about Conor Murray being picked for a test match game, whether that's you don't think it is a surprise, but I do think Ali Price is unlucky. I don't think he really put a foot wrong in the first test. As I said before, he's been I've been a big fan of him kind of really since the Six Nations. I thought his game, his performance, especially against Wales at Murrayfield, was outstanding. And I thought at that moment, I was like, well, he could definitely work his way into potentially the Lions squad. I don't think we knew what was going to happen with Ben Youngs ruling himself out of the tour at that point. But yeah, no, I thought he didn't really put a foot wrong on the weekend. But as you quite rightly say, Joe, Connor has come in with his experience. He knows what it takes to win Lions matches. And let's not forget, there's a reason why Warren Gatland picked him as captain when before Alwyn Jones decided he was going to become the miracle man and get himself back out to South Africa. So there's that. I think it's that level of experience, that level of analysis. No disrespect to him at all. Don't think he's been at his very best during the tour. Maybe the captaincy has weighed him a little bit down. I know we see that sometimes with sports people that having that leadership role when they're not quite used to it can have an effect. But nevertheless, Connor's a world-class player for a reason. And you know, it's hardly putting the Lions at a disadvantage in playing in the Nines shirt at the weekend.
No, but it's a funny one, isn't it? Because Conor Murray's best game of the Six Nations was towards the end of it, wasn't it? And it was only really the one performance, because he wasn't really starting throughout the Six Nations. And then he's come in for this game and you kind of don't know what you're going to get from him. Because obviously one of the things about the Lions is that you pick on form, and that's seen throughout the squad with Wyn Jones, with Roy Sutherland and a few other guys. There are like a few proven test guys there, like probably you just say the Saracens contingent. That's probably where you went, you'd go and say these are your, as Eddie liked to call them, test match animals. And, you know, those are the guys that you can rely on in those kind of crunch situations because of what they've achieved at club level, at international level. So personally, I wouldn't have done it. And it just, and that's not, I mean, let's be honest, I am nowhere near the knowledge of Warren Gatland or have got even a modicum of the experience that he's had in rugby throughout his life and his career. But for me, I don't know, it was a winning formula, and there was nothing wrong with the relationship between Price and Bigger. There was nothing wrong with between the relationship of, well, obviously I think Daly was the one that was a bit kind of more of a question mark, but you know, Mako's played himself into that team. Whereas you'd argue the others, well, apart from Evie Harris, I think he's been classed, to be fair, the entire tour and the entire season, but you'd argue that Conor Murray hasn't done anything in order to make you think, oh, he's the right man for this test. Is that, that's probably harsh.
No, yeah, I think there's, you have seen players who have played incredibly well in the warm-up games who have got themselves a place in the test side because of a performance in a warm-up game, if that makes sense. So like Jack Conan's a perfect example. He was brilliant and stood out at a few times in the warm-up games and is now starting his second test in a row, which he might not have dreamt about sort of when he was getting taken off injured in the World Cup, or he picked up that injury in the World Cup 2 years ago. So he's an example. I think Tom Curry as well is an example of that. You know, played very, very well against Africa A. I think a lot of people might have said Hamish Watson was going to be nailed on Six Nations Player of the Tournament, et cetera, et cetera. But Curry is one of those players. And it's, as you say, Joe, it kind of might be unfair to say, well, Conor's not really done more than Ali Price has in this tour. But it's going back to what something you said before, which I'm going to tee you up nice with now, is kind of the cards are all on Warren's side, the ball is in his court. You know, he has that winning formula now, and he can tinker with it. What I am glad he's not done is gone wholesale and gone to sort of change loads of the team round. He's only gone for three key positions on the pitch, really. You know, Mako's influence showed how key he was on the weekend. Nine's always, we know how influential and I can be on a game. Just look at Fafter Clerk, how influential he is every time he plays. Yeah. And 13 was the position where the South Africa got a bit of joy of the weekend with the Alande and Am. So, yeah, I'm glad he's not done wholesale changes, but in regards to Murray, I do think he's not done, I do agree with you, I don't think he's done anything extraordinary to be, well, actually definitely needs to be ahead of Ali Price, but experience and sort of that money in the bank has probably given him this opportunity to play in the second test.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously you touched on Watson there. He's no longer on the bench. It's Talupe Faletau that's taking his place. And he kind of feels like a bit of George Cruz from 2017. When George Cruz, he was involved in that first test, wasn't he? And then didn't have a great showing. And then that's when Courtney Laws got his first test cap. And now he's on his fourth this weekend. And that's kind of what it feels like with Watson. He came out and he had a display that just didn't really show you anything that made you think, oh, this guy's a proper lion. And obviously he is a lion. And obviously no one's ever going to be able to take that away from him. But when he came on the pitch and he looked a bit overawed by the situation, you do then become a bit concerned. And obviously I know, and you know, how much we rate him. And we thought at one point he was going to be the starting seven. But the reality of the situation is right now is that Tom Curry's proven himself, even if he did give away a few daft penalties. I think with Watson, the key thing in all of that was the challenge on Willie LaRue, which it looked bad at the time. I was a bit surprised it wasn't a card. I can imagine you might have thought the same, although I know you were watching it in a much different environment. You were watching it in Hamish's home club, in the club. What was the reaction, actually? Because Chris was at Wilmslow Rugby Club at the weekend when he was watching the game. What was the reaction like when Hamish stepped onto the pitch?
Well, it wasn't actually that busy down there. It surprised me. So it was a decent sell, to be fair. But it was more, you know, it was everyone was supporting the Lions. Really, I think a few people mentioned although Hamish played, but you know, he wasn't obviously a name that played too many games for Wilmslow. But you know, his shirt is up in the club and he is remembered fondly there. But yeah, he is one of those. You do feel sorry for him a little bit because we've had him on the Loose Heads Talking Rugby Union podcast. I can't remember now, probably this time last year, and we mentioned the Lions to him. He was a great guy and he's obviously deserved to where he is. Phenomenal year he's had, but it's those fine margins really that potentially have seen him drop out of the 23, maybe his decision making has cost him a little bit, because you know he was obviously eager to get involved, but maybe a little too eager. But with Faletau, as you say, Joe, coming in, he does add a little bit of a dimension. He does add an extra kind of on 60. Who can he turn to maybe change the game? And many people will say Sam Simmons has that in bucket loads, but given Faletau's experience in a red shirt for the Lions and a red shirt with Warren Gatland in Wales, It seems a very sensible choice to have Faletau on the bench, and he's proven as well when he's been available for Bath in the season just gone, how influential he can be going forward with the ball in hand.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Faletau, again, he's got that experience in the bank, and you talked about Sam Simmons there. There wasn't, I mean, I don't know about you, and I think everyone was a lot along these lines, like we would love to have seen Sam Simmons become a Test Lion. But the reality of the situation is that when he went to South Africa, I didn't see anything exceptional from him that made me think he's definitely going to be a Test Lion. Hamish Watson went out there, didn't miss a tackle across all the warm-up games that he played. I think it was 38 out of 38 or 39 out of 39, something like that. But then he goes into the Test match and doesn't look right. Whereas you can then turn around and say, who would look right in a Test match? Tiloko Faletau has been playing Test match rugby for nearly 10 years. And he's been a Lion on... Is this third occasion Lion? Was he there in 2013? I think he was. He might not have been, but this is just me drawing a blank because I was in school at the time. I was thinking about my GCSEs. And, you know, like, that's the reality of the situation. And unfortunately, Warren's got to go to people he can rely on. And with Hamish, he could have been a man down for the rest of the game after Hamish came on. So you've got to kind of turn around and say that's the situation. I think Chris Harris is an interesting one. Obviously there to help out with the defence. I alluded to it earlier. Obviously, I went to have a bit of a social with Charlie Beckett at a cricket game the other week. And he and I were talking about Chris Harris, of course, his former Gloucester teammate. And he was amazed with the amount of work that Chris Harris puts into work in terms of organising defence, looking at how to break down other teams and all this kind of thing. And I said, at the end of the Six Nations, I wanted Robbie Henshaw and Chris Harris to be in my centre partnership. We fast forward, it's finally happening. My Test match team that I put together before last week before Alex Lowe so unkindly leaked all the teams, the team news ahead of schedule. And I still had them as my centre partnership. And now it makes sense to me because both are really good defensively and it matches up with what Lucanio Am and Damien Diolende do anyway. The only thing you would argue is that they take away the kicking option. But you've still got Stuart Hogg, Anthony Watson, Dan Bigger, and then Conor Murray on top of that, who more than anything, Conor Murray at this point of his career is basically just a kicking machine. And that's kind of what you have to look at. And as harsh as that is, I don't know it is, but he's not, I wouldn't say he's the player he was 4 years ago. And I mean that with all due respect because he's a hell of a player. And because kicking's so important. And I think that's the other thing. I think Faletau has got used to that. He played in a fairly similar-ish system with Wales where, in particular, at the end of Gatland's time there, when who was playing 10? It wasn't Bigger. It was Ospreys. Anscombe.
Anscombe, yeah.
Patchell was there, but Patchell was more there as... Oh, he played fullback a bit, didn't he, actually, to be fair, now you mention it. But when Anscombe was playing 10, he was there to kick the doors off, and then Bigger came on to have a big impact with the kicking again later on. And then you bring on, like, a winger in the centre or, you know, whatever. And in the players that are on the pitch now, I feel like that suits it better because it's got to match what South Africa have got to, going to do. And again, Warren said last week that South Africa kicked the ball 40 times in the game on average, and that's freakish. That's freakish in Test match rugby. It's usually like 20 times, if that. And then, so for them to kick it that much tells you how important that is. And I think across the board, there's a group of players there that are more than capable of dealing with it. Even like you look at Jack Conan, who's athletic. He's a great ball carrier, but he's very athletic, as is Tom Curry. As is Courtney Laws. Courtney Laws, yeah, he might be huge and about 120 odd kg, but he can still run around the park as if it's, I don't know, like he's just done an Ironman or something like that. I don't know. He's one of those, and so is Alan Wynne, and so is Marrow. And even the props, to be fair, pretty, you know, obviously props these days are a lot fitter than they were. I think Warren's put together the perfect team because Chris Harris can marshal the defence like nobody's business. And maybe that was what was lacking last week, which forced the errors with Elliot Daly not being as adept at that and having to play outside centre, which is basically a key position for organising and marshalling defences. Like, yeah, it depends on your system, but yeah.
I do agree with Joe on that. It's kind of, I think Harris is there to marshal the defence a little bit more. And, we will be speaking to Lee Mays on the TRU talks this week as well. And the one that we did do before another technical hitch last week, well, not technical hitch, it was just the Lions were moving things a little bit forward, which made our chat null and void, really. But he kind of said that Warren may pick a team that can kind of replicate a World Cup final scenario. It's a one-game shootout, get the job done and, you know, there will be a prize at the end of it. This is now that kind of scenario. And I think that's why he might have gone with Harris and Murray in particular to try and shore things up a little bit. We know Mako's brilliant in the scrum anyway, but with Harris, it's kind of just quite try and keep it tight as possible. Don't let Tyler can make any inroads, which you quite rightly say, Joe, was kind of where they were sort of getting most of their joy at last Saturday, and they were able to tip the scoreboard over as much as possible as well. So the more you can limit them, the better. And I think that's why Harris is in there. He's a great player. He deserves to be there on merit, but that is why he's come in there, for his defensive qualities. And with Daly, you know, he's still on the bench. So it is tight and it is 17 all or whatever with 5 minutes to go, and there is a penalty from ridiculous meters out. So
70 meters, yeah.
Yeah, Daly has, that is an option where if the Lions are struggling at line out time, which I know they weren't at the weekend, but they, you know, they managed to wrestle that back. But yeah, if they are struggling, rather than go in the corner, let's have a go for it. Let's try and, you know, use the armoury that we have on the bench. So you summed it up pretty well, Joe, saying he's built the perfect team. You look around the team and there's different elements which all come together to hopefully make a winning performance for the Lions of the weekend.
Yeah, and what I should have said as well before was obviously if, what was it? It was Elliot Daly coming off the bench. He provides another kicking option later on in the game if you want to stretch the play. Because South Africa, in contrast, they've literally got, what's he called? Henrik Jantes, because you actually have to pronounce the J in his name, not like Elton. And then also you've got Damian Willemse, who again is a kicking option. So they're matching it there. It's, I don't know. I think this game's going to be a bit tighter as a result of the extended kicking. But I think there should be enough for the Lions there. I don't know. It's kind of a funny one because we've seen South Africa adapt their game plan for this weekend.
Yeah, we haven't. We sort of changing. I think it's the two props of a right and saying Joe. And you know, they, you know, Mako came on and made such a big difference, and they'll be absolutely seething at that. They will want to be right. We need to be at it all week going into the weekend, and that first scrum's going to be so crucial in the game. South Africa will not want to get beaten up like they did sort of in the last 20 minutes in terms of that, so in terms of that penalty. And yeah, they've gone back obviously the 6-2 split as well on the bench, which served them so well at the World Cup.
Well, it's funny because obviously you talked about how passive they were at the scrum in the last 20 minutes, but the huge irony in all of that is that the two props that are starting in Stephen Kitsoff and Franz Mal Herbert, they were the players that were brought on at halftime to try and solidify the scrum. So it's like you do kind of wonder if they want to go passively again for the first half, but then you look at the bench and I think Stephen Nyanke, the guy, but he was starting at tight head last week and now he's going to cover loose head, and then tight head prop is Vincent Cock, and it just kind of, I don't think that's right. It doesn't make sense to me. I think they should have, I mean, obviously Oxy couldn't do anything about, but it seems really odd.
I don't know whether it's, I don't have that insight, but I don't know whether it's to do with the fact that these African players are still, you know, building test match intensity. You know, it might be used as a little bit of excuse, but they played Georgia, and no disrespect to Georgia, they're not going to bring the first level of competition as a tier one nation would. And the fact that this is the British and Irish Lions, which is a different kettle of fish altogether, whether that's taken a lot out of South Africa, they've not really realised, you know, the intensity levels. And you got to don't forget that a lot of those guys who are playing, you know, Mako aside, have been playing top flight rugby in their domestic league this year. I mean, South Africa have managed to get some sort of rugby on with the Rainbow Nations Cup and things like Rainbow Cup and things like that. But, you know, are they really conditioned as well as these Lions boys who have not only had domestic seasons but also had all these warm-up games to get used to the physicality which the other province teams have given them? And that might be why South Africa have changed it or tried to change it to keep it as fresh as possible. But as you say, Joe, it kind of backfired at the weekend, and I want to make sure that they get that blend absolutely right on Saturday.
Yeah. And it's interesting as well, they've gone back to the Bish Bash Bosh at number 8 with Jasper Visa starting.
Yeah.
I think that's obviously where they struggled a bit last weekend in terms of getting gain line. I think obviously we talk about gain line all the time. It's always important to break those tackles and get the extra meter and, you know, maybe have a little roll in and amongst all of it to try and get a bit further ahead. Because Quagga Smith, he didn't do anything wrong, but he didn't really do anything like massively outstanding to regain his place at number 8. And I mean, I've always seen him as a flanker. I've never really seen him as I've never really seen him as a number eight. I mean, I know he's been playing number eight in Japan, but I don't know. I think stepping up to the international level to play number eight is probably a bit different to playing domestically at number eight anyway. Yeah, it's a funny one. I think Jasper Visa is going to be perfect for it. And obviously, I spoke to Francois Lowe about him the other week, and he said he was so massively impressed with him, with how he's applied himself at Leicester, and that he didn't actually really know who the kid was before he arrived in Leicester. So they've had to go back to that route one, but it's still a backline that won the World Cup. It's the same backline that won the World Cup final. And the majority of them are names in the pack that have come back as well, actually. You know, when you kind of look at the grand scheme of things. It's so hard to gauge the Springboks, I think. Do you agree with that? Because I kind of look at them and I'm just like, I don't actually know what's going to happen.
That's the thing, isn't it, Joe? You know, we've seen sort of the build-up from maybe probably the Rugby Championship before the World Cup, and they kind of went through it. And if I'm right in saying they beat New Zealand, but I think they won it. They obviously won the tournament, and then they've gone, obviously... Yeah. Through the World Cup itself, with that only defeat, they lost, I think, the opening game, didn't they, against the All Blacks?
They did. They went through the first team ever to do so.
Yeah. And they went through it, and we've known how they were going to play. And I guess if you are of a certain age, probably a lot older than me and you, Joe, you would have seen the blueprint of South Africa playing like this for, you know, the last couple of decades. You know, this kind of blueprint which they have, and now a team has got under the skin like the Lions did, it does have that level of intrigue around it. Like, how are they going to perform? Are they going to go, we're not changing? But in a way they have to, and Lee said that to me in his first column, Lee Mayers, he said that, you know, that's going to be an interesting part of it, because if you lose the first test, you're going to have to change. And you would, if the Lions are lost, they would have to adapt as well, but it would be a lot easier for them to adapt because they have. We know a lot about the squad. There's different dimensions in the squad, whereas South Africa, we know how they're going to play. And the fact they've reverted to 6-2 on the bench, I don't know whether it gives us a hint they're going to potentially just go back to the 2019, well, the blueprint that made a world championship. Who knows? But you're right, Joe. I think it's a very good point. We are intrigued. There's a mystery around this South African side, and it's probably going to be even more interesting to see how they get on in this game than it was when they played last weekend, or even when South Africa A played against the Lions a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and there's kind of been a bit of a comic side element to the lead up this week, especially with South Africa. Obviously, this is something we talked about earlier. But Razzy Erasmus's burner Twitter account.
Mad. Absolutely crazy. Wasn't he liking TR News tweets?
So I went through to see like what the account, when the account was made, and like what it liked, because I was like, well, if it's got more than like 100 likes, then maybe it won't be Razzy, because I can't imagine he's staying on his burner to like tweets as opposed to this, that, and the other. But it's only got a few, like it's, I think, literally 15. And the first one's Munster, which is obviously telling because Razzy was at Munster. Then I think one of the other ones was Leinster, and then there was like just a couple of others, like South Africa Rugby Magazine and all that kind of stuff. But then one of them was a TRU school from the TRU schools account, which was it was something really odd. It was like a Highlanders Hurricane Super Rugby game. And it was like Liam Coltman has entered the field, and that was it. And then he'd liked it.
It's all bizarre. I think it's the word I'd use. I think it's bizarre. I think it's a bit weird. Both similar words, but I just think it's not a good look, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And a reference when we recorded what we did before the technical issues, that what his press conference was yesterday, and what is sort of the way he's handled the media, his social media and the media recently, is very Rafa Benitez in 2008, I think. Obviously, I'm a Liverpool fan, love the man. Brilliant, but that moment is an iconic moment in Premier League history in terms of that season, and Rafa, Liverpool top of the league, and seeing everything was going their way, but Rafa seemed to crack up in a press conference and started calling out Sir Alex Ferguson and referees to do a job and such like, and it a little bit of shades of what Razzy Erasmus is doing. You know, he's mentioned about the referee this weekend, Ben O'Keefe, I think it is, he's from New Zealand. he said, oh, Gats is from New Zealand, but we don't make that comparison. It's like, does he really need to say that? You know, he's these clips which he's been tweeting of discretion from the Lions, you know, tie tackles from Farrell, even at the weekend with, I think, the Vunipola stuff. And it's just like, why? You know, this is a man who's led the nation to glory at the World Cup. I was watching the Chasing the Sun documentary on Sky, watched a couple of episodes, and you can tell everybody loves him. He's built up this legacy. He's a hero in South Africa. And sort of, for me, and it might be a bit harsh, but and if he wants to tweet me, he can, because he's been active on social media. But I just think it's starting to tarnish him as a coach. He was a brilliant head coach of the Springboks. He's now director of rugby of them. You know, this is a team that have so much quality. You know, they're littered with the best, the Fafita Klerk, the best players in the world. But it's kind of like, stop now, because you're literally playing into the Lions' hands. And if the Lions need any extra motivation, if they needed it at all, Warren Gatland will be waking up looking at those articles and emails going, what is he doing? Focus on beating the Lions. Focus on the biggest spectacle, arguably, in rugby other than the World Cup. And it's bizarre. For me, it's just crazy, but I know you have an opinion on it, Jeff.
Well, to be fair, I'm going to preface my opinion with one thing, and that's going to be that, but he's known to be to these kind of spates of pettiness, is probably what you describe him as. Do you remember when Owen Farrell did get the card, and then he didn't get a card, did he, in the end? And then they were talking about in the second test how Damien Diolende had to do the tackling and get tackled correctly and all this kind of stuff. Like, do you remember that when he had the big pad and then he was asking Diolende to basically run into it and he hit him high and all that kind of stuff? He's known for these little bits of pettiness, and I don't know, maybe he's just kind of unhinged it a bit more, but it's like I said earlier, which is probably given the name of this podcast when I put it out. So, you know, it's either brilliance or it's madness. Like, and if it's madness and he's just lost his head, then it's rubbish for South Africa. However, the other side of it is that everyone coming into this all-important second test, and this is the most important thing, because if they lose it, then the week after means nothing, realistically. And it coming into this game now, none of his players are answering big questions. None of the players have been asked, well, do you think you still deserve your place in the team because of this? Everyone's saying, do you think it's Radzi's Twitter account? Do you think, you know, what's the mood been like around camp with all this stuff going on around Radzi? You having a laugh about it? All the pressure's off the players now. So if they come through and win a game, Razzie's going to be completely vindicated in everything that he's done this week, even though it's been completely wacky.
Yeah, it's a good way of looking at it, Joe. It really is. I just think kind of the way, there's nothing wrong with mind games. So it's a part of sport at the top level. Every sport, there's probably mind games between coaches, players. In rugby in particular, Warren Gatland has proven, sort of, Evan Ryan saying in 2017, that tit for tat with Steve Hansen. And it was kind of like, you know, the mind game started. Warren always has it with Eddie Jones, Six Nations time. We've always seen it. And he's a master at it. And there's no getting behind it. You know, I think in one of my articles that I did, just after the South Africa A game, I can't remember who it was, one of the players was on press. And it was kind of, it was Greg O'Townsend was on press, and it was like talking about the game, and then Rassi come out with all these tweets. And I kind of thought at the time, oh, he's lit the fuse on this series. You know, there was a talk of the high score lines and whether lines are going to be tested. But after that South Africa game, the spark seemed to be like there. And I thought, this is good, bit of needle, nothing wrong with that in sport. But the weight's gone for him being so magnanimous in defeat and saying, you know, fair play, great performance. Rassi tweeted the Lions' official account of him, right, and saying, great performance, yeah, given the circumstances, to this war of words and point scoring. And it's just, that for me, it's just a reason to excuse potentially what was a disappointing second-half performance from a Springbok perspective, because they were in control of the game. And, you know, I got it wrong on Twitter. I said, game management superb, can't see the world champions or whatever coming and losing this from here. And they did. And that's, you know, and maybe Rassi thought this is the best form of defence, going on the attack and highlighting something completely different, rather than going, let's keep it using our own channels, keep it between us, work on it on a Monday, Tuesday training, Wednesday off, go Thursday, Friday again, but instead it's out there. And it's either, as you say, Joe, it's either absolute genius, using the mind games and things like that, or he's, it's, for me personally, it's more in the bizarre camp than genius, but we'll have to wait and see on Saturday.
Well, that's the thing. I was just kind of thinking about, obviously, you talked about Rafa Benitez when Liverpool were top of the league, and I was just thinking about the Kevin Keegan thing when Newcastle were top of the league, and he did the same thing, didn't he?
That's top level sport, isn't it? As much as I, grew up despising the football team, Sir Alex Ferguson, arguably one of the greatest managers of all, well, to everyone pretty much, he's the greatest manager of all time, was an absolute genius at getting under people's skin. He did it with Mourinho, did it with Wenger, did it with Keegan back when you're talking about, Joe. And it's there, and you've just got to pick your battles wisely and try and be astute with it. And I think Warren has, and he's now got Rassi chasing his own tail a little bit. That's possibly, and it's just overshadowing what we talked about 10 minutes ago, Joe, about Jasper Fiesta coming in. How excited should the Springboks be? They changed the front row. What can they? We're talking about, unfortunately, the headlines have been a lot from the Springbok camp this week about Rassi. And it's like, is he the man? Is he still the number one? Everyone should be focusing on him. And he's making it about him, unfortunately, at the moment.
Yeah, but we would have said the same last week when the Lions were complaining about Marius Jonker being the television match official. Like, that, in my opinion, was always unnecessary. And it was maybe, again, it was that thing of, oh, what can we pick at to try and just distract from the players and all this kind of stuff and what we're doing, so we can actually focus on what we're doing and just deflect. Like, with Marius Jonker, he was obviously television match official because someone was unavailable to get there. Like, it was a travel situation that went wrong. And, I mean, obviously, officials inherently are always going to try and be unbiased. We've seen with the cricket, the ICC, obviously they're not flying umpires here, there and everywhere to do games. They are doing it with local people, people who are based in that country, and that's the way it's been done. And for me, it was always just more a case of, let's distract from this situation because we don't want to have the chat about all these serious things. We don't really want to talk about the Springboks. And because inherently you should trust your officials, and the officials are professional, or if not, very well immersed. And they also get these great life experiences, have been able to go out to Cape Town, have been able to do this, that and the other. But is that not what rugby is turning into? But then again, is that maybe because the crowds aren't there? Because after the first game, you'd arguably be talking about how good is it going to be to be playing in front of your family for the Lions, this, that and the other. And you kind of do it from there, as opposed to the 200 people, I'm guessing 200 people that were crammed into, not crammed, but, let loose around Cape Town Stadium at the weekend. I don't know. It's the same with the Olympics. Like, you've been watching it and it just doesn't feel the same. So maybe just deflecting from everything. I don't think we'd be focusing on it as much if there was like more things going on.
Yeah, I think you're right, Joe. And, hopefully, like it was kind of last Saturday when we're all absolutely loving a brilliant test match, the rugby will do the talking rather than the coaches or the officials or a game-changing decision, because the game last Saturday was a proper test match. And it's what we've all been waiting for so long in terms of the build to the Lions. Is it going ahead? Is it not going ahead? Is it South Africa? Wherever. And it really came to the fore of the weekend. It was a brilliant test match. And we hope sort of the second test match this Saturday will be the same. And I know Joe will be on duty for TRU for that one at the moment. And then just to kind of come to some sort of conclusion, Joe, before we go back to the Lions to give our predictions, we want to mention the Olympics today. Because Team GB reached the bronze medal final this morning, but sadly couldn't pick up a medal. I mean, I don't think, anyone would have predicted the TGB men's side to get this far 9 months ago, when their futures, not only in terms of rugby, but their lives, were so up in the air. They didn't know what was going on. Some players were searching for clubs, some players were searching for jobs. A rugby player is a job, but some people are having to maybe turn their attention away from rugby, which is so, so depressing. But what they've done, the nation of Great Britain, incredibly proud of their performance, despite coming just that tantalisingly so close to a medal, Joe.
Mate, it was a bit of heartbreaking for me today to see them boys, because obviously, like, after the win over the USA yesterday, obviously I interacted with Ben Harris, for example, who I interviewed, thanks to Saracens, and then on top of that, you see Harry Glover, who I interviewed just last week, actually. And then you add on to that some of the other people. Oh, sorry, 2 weeks ago I spoke to Harry. Then I wrote it for last Sunday. But anyway, that's not important. But, you know, I spoke to Harry. I've spoken to Alex Davis. I've spoken to Dan Norton, Tom Mitchell. Probably some names are missing out there, and I feel terrible about that. And then obviously the guys in the wider squad that didn't make it, unfortunately, like Rich DC and Tom Emery and people like that, who obviously I have massive respect for. Obviously, I'm kind of in that small camp of people that actually went out to travel and watched them in Colombia in 2019 as they qualified to do coverage for TRU, of course. And I mean, I wasn't paying for that. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you see these guys who you know the struggle they've gone through, maybe a bit more intimately than some people actually realise, especially if you're just whacking the telly on and the Sevens is on, like is the case with the Olympics, where you just kind of see what's on. Then if you watch it and it's good, you enjoy it, and then you'll go back to it in 4 years' time, well, 5 years' time in this case, and 3 years for the next one. But yeah, it was hard. It was hard to watch because the guys, they put so much into it, and it was, yeah, man. I found it hard to watch, and I felt terrible for them all. It was a bit heartbreaking. Dan Baby's last game, as I understand, in sevens ever, possibly the same for some of the older boys as well. I'm not sure, really. Like, I'm sure Tom Mitchell will make a return, but the thing is, the future's still not certain for the sevens boys, and whether or not they're professional or not come the start of the, I think it's a truncated World Series in the autumn. It was difficult, but the thing is, what they've done is made everyone so proud, given the time they've had and everything they've gone through in order to get to that point, lobbying to get their own funding, doing like coaching clinics and this, that and the other to prove their worth. And I think that was the big thing of it. They've proven their worth beyond doubt in this past year. It was literally at the start of this month, about 13 months ago now, these guys were all left without a job because their contracts were cancelled early or had just come to an end naturally. And obviously I'm proud to have spoken to these guys, to know some of these guys. And it's hard. It is hard. But they've done everyone proud, and I think that's the most important thing, the message I want to relay to everyone. And the beauty of it is we've still got the women who've gone through the same struggles as the men, who are going to be starting their play tonight, I think. Yeah, tonight, bloody hell. But by the time this goes out, we'll know whether or not they're in medal contention or if they're playing for just a different spot. So obviously, as much as this won't mean anything by the time the podcast goes out, we obviously wish them all the best in their endeavours. Chris, I'm sure you were watching it as well, because I just kind of went downstairs and it was on. It was hard to watch at the end.
Yeah, it was. And you know, you make a good point there, Joe, that the guys, both the men's and the women's, have had to fight so hard for a dream that a lot of people will never get, which is to go and play for your country at the Olympics. And they've had to do it off their own back, and that should never be overlooked, because these are athletes at the top of the game, and they've had to put aside potentially starting a new life for something that maybe 5-10% of them might have felt, this isn't going to happen. How are we ever going to get ourselves ready to go and play at the Olympic Games in Japan? But against all the odds they have, and then on top of that, the men have done what they've done. And, you know, there'll be cynics out there, well, they didn't get a medal, but being there is an achievement in itself. And I know that's probably the last thing those guys want to hear after making their way to Japan and getting so close to a medal, but they have done the country proud, and the silver lining, hopefully, that the decision makers can take from this, Joe, is that Sevens deserves the backing. Sevens, we know this, you know this more than anyone, Joe, it's a pathway for players, and it gives the players that you've rattled off there and all the women who, as you said, by the time this goes out, will hopefully be in medal contention as well, a chance to go and play in the Olympics. And what at the moment, obviously, fund it, you know, we're not going to sit here and pretend we know the finances behind it all, but there has to be a realisation now that the programme needs backing, because they are athletes at the top of the game, and to deny them this opportunity. But also, you know, everyone's behind it. You just see the retweets yesterday, and I think our Twitter feed might have been mental when people go, oh my God, what a come that USA game, what a comeback. How does that not inspire the next generation? How does not get people into rugby? And I just, you know, I just think the silver lining is, as much as it's heartbreaking, the lads didn't get a medal out there, they've done the country proud and they've hopefully put sevens back in people's minds. So like you say, you know, I wish the girl all the best. Hopefully by the time this goes out, we'll be hopefully tuning into maybe a medal game for them. But they're a massive family and they deserve absolutely backing. And, you know, hopefully there is some positive news to come out of this for the sevens program.
Yeah, of course. And I've just seen these quotes that have come up on my Twitter, which we wouldn't have had earlier. So this kind of works out quite well. This is what Mr. Bibby said. Obviously, he's leaving nothing behind. He's not going to leave anyone doubting as he heads back to Wigan after this week. If you look at who's done well in this tournament, New Zealand have had a full programme the entire time. Argentina, full programme the entire time. Fiji, full programme the entire time. You can't compete at this level unless you're properly funded.
Yeah, and Team GB were properly funded and were that close.
Yeah. These guys were left with it all to do this time last year. And then, you know, for them to even got to that point when you consider that they only got together in what? February? March? Something like that. Something stupid like that. And they've got to within the whisker of a medal. It's incredible. And they deserve everything that comes to them. And the thing is, like, I actually had to back down people yesterday saying, oh, well, they were always going to beat the USA. USA has been a full-time program for a long time now, 10 years.
What an incredible team they are, the USA.
Yeah. The boys had to dig deep in order to beat the USA because they'd been battered for the first 7 minutes. So, you know, people turn around saying, oh, they were always meant to beat them. They weren't. They weren't always meant to beat them because a lot of them were in the park this time a year ago. And not even together, they were just by themselves, like just running around doing Broncos in a park, which, by the way, I couldn't think of anything worse, but they actually had a goal for it. And in my opinion, they've achieved it and they've done everyone proud. They've done themselves proud more than anything and they've done the families proud more than anything. They don't have to worry about me and you. They have to worry about their families and themselves. And I think they've done outstanding stuff. Absolutely outstanding. So massive congratulations to them. And obviously that extends to the women's team as well, obviously, who are yet to take the field. Whatever they do, it's a massive achievement. But yeah, I'll reach out in the next few weeks. I won't do it anytime soon, but because they need to get home to their families and loved ones and take it from there. But mate, yeah, it was hard, but yeah, that's sport.
Yeah, it is, and yeah, we do, like I said, that hopefully by the time this goes out Friday, that the women will be in some sort of medal contention. But whatever happens, they have also done Team GB incredibly proud, just being there, and considering what the family of the rugby sevens have gone through, kind of over the last 12 months, as Joe said. So lots more to come on TRU. Certainly at the end of this week, by the time this goes out, you would have seen hopefully our TRU talks with Lee Mears. Discussing the second test against South Africa, and there should also be an exclusive with Kelly Brown, sort of now of Saracens, been the assistant coach. He's talked really well about sort of Maro Itoje and his development. Mako Vunipola obviously been in the side, a little bit about the Scots and the Lions squad as well. So that is all to come on TRU over the next week or so. Before I let you go, Joe, predictions for Saturday, yes, please.
I think it's going to be a tighter game. I think it's going to be... Oh, do I want to say penalty first? I want to say penalty first. I'm going to say 12-9 Lions.
You've actually given a scoreline. I was just going to go as simple as 2-0 to Gatland boys. Get the job done. Get the series done. Fly home. Don't need to play in the last game. Or just completely change the squad. Get a Toji at fly off. Do what they need to do on the 7th of August. But yeah, we wish the Lions obviously all the best as well. And we're hoping for another cracking test match of the weekend. Joe will be on duty for us. So keep an eye out for the match reports and the quotes from hopefully another Lions winning coach, Warren Gatland. And I think probably Alwyn Jones will be on, might be there as well. But we'll have that confirmation maybe, if not on Saturday. But
depends who the 10 PM embargo is. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes, but we'll have all the reaction from Lions vs. Africa on TRU on Saturday night. Well, Joe, nice one as always, mate. Enjoy the rest of your week. I know it's your birthday next week, so enjoy the rest of your week, mate. And yeah, take care. And that's been another TRU Talks.